welcome to the co-op.
I am your host, Matt, here with Rebecca Bratton-Weiss, as always. We took a week off last week because I was on vacation, and we tried, but I had internet problems, and so I just sit on the beach instead. We're happy to be back this week, and we got lots of stuff to talk about. But first, we had a kind of an interesting conversation with someone today. We usually get from time to time we'll get messages on our Facebook page from people who are a bit disgruntled. And we've definitely, you know, dealt with our share of detractors, but we had a guy message us today that had some pretty interesting questions for us. He reached out to us, yeah. and he didn't start it off as if he was interviewed. We found out about halfway through his odd line of questioning that this was that our conversation was going to be published in an unnamed publication by one of three unnamed editors who are, are already very interested in this, what seems to be a very interesting story kind of situation. But the first thing he asked us was why we don't talk more about sexual education why specifically in our about section on Facebook do we not talk more about sexual education and then access to contraception in our about section. And of course, you know, we explained to him that we haven't explicitly made a call for just free and total access to birth control, but we do strongly encourage more sexual education, and we strongly encourage free and universal health care, which generally does tend to include contraception for people who want to use it. But we just, we explain that at the end of the day, we recognize that when a woman is has the resources and the education to make educated decisions about her body, and when she decides that she wants to have a baby and can control those things a little bit better, we have fewer crisis pregnancies, and therefore we have fewer abortions. And we explain that we tend to talk about these issues in more specifically in our content. Because we know how things can be taken, and so we're not trying to explain everything in our about section. It was kind of a weird conversation, but
it was weird.
So at first, it just kind of sounded like he was being a little persnickety, and maybe just kind of digging at us a little bit, trying to get us to answer some questions, or maybe get emotional. I don't know. It didn't really start off all that bad, but then he turns and asks us if we are advocates for masturbation as a means of reducing abortion. And we said no, because we're not. It's not really something on our radar. But he was really intent on promoting the idea that masturbation will somehow lead people to not getting in crisis pregnancy. I think the theory is that we should be promoting it because it's a way for people to release their sexual urges without having to engage in sex itself, and therefore would prevent a crisis pregnancy from the start, and therefore we should be promoting that, which is I guess that's true. I guess if people don't have sex, then, obviously they're not going to end up in a crisis pregnancy. But we just found it funny and absurd, especially when he called it, a new, inexpensive and effective way to cut the abortion rate.
Well, he questioned our credentials as being new because we hadn't added that to our platform, until we add masturbation to the new pro-life platform. Presumably we're just the same old pro-life movement, which is interesting.
It really is.
And I would love to have our detractors hear that, because they're always telling us that we're not pro-life at all.
Absolutely.
And I church militant was kind of harassing us on Twitter, what was that, about a month ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Interestingly enough, on that same topic of contraception. So I don't know, maybe we need to reach out to them and be like, hey guys, turns out we're exactly like you all, just because we don't have masturbation on our platform.
And I will say too that if the theory really is that if we promote and encourage people to masturbate, they won't have sex. That to me sounds about as effective as abstinence-only education to begin with, because yeah. I don't think it's anything that most teenagers aren't already fully aware of, and it was absurd and it was interesting. We thought it was pretty funny, and we wanted to share that before we got into some of our other topics today.
Yeah, maybe so.
Apparently, there are three really cool publications that are interested in this conversation already, and so he'll I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see what comes out. We'll be on the lookout for it.
Publicity is always good.
It's always fun to run into new detractors and people who want to challenge us. We always accept a challenge, but it's always interesting what people are going to come up with. That is definitely probably one of the more bizarre things out there. We do have some other things we really want to discuss. There's been some events that have happened in the past couple weeks that open up the door for us to talk a little bit deeper into issues of sexual assault. Especially with this, and Rebecca, I'm going to let you take the floor on this here in a second, because I think you can put more truth to the story than I can. Understanding that when we talk about issues of, we talk about life issues in general, sex is very much a part of this. One of our bigger criticisms is that there tends to be this weird, hypocritical, and yet puritanical kind of approach to sex in even Christian and pro-life circles that can manifest itself in not just sexual assault, but and sexual deviancy, but just manipulation, manipulating people into sleeping with you, or finding ways for people to get around certain beliefs or whatever. But I think one of the things we need to discuss with this is not just the issue of sexual assault, but the issue of emotional and mental abuse combined with sexual conquest, in a way, manipulating women into sleeping with you as a form of sexual harassment, sexual assault. And Rebecca, I want to let you talk about the story that we're kind of alluding to here and some of the other events that have led up to this.
Oh, and I want to add to what you said, that there's kind of a substratum of sexism running through that. Mm-hmm. And I see that across the board. It's in secular circles, it's in Hollywood, it's in politics, it's in the hookup culture, and it's also heavily, heavily present in religious communities. Mm-hmm. I would say in some respects even more so. I think that those communities are the ones in which it's absolutely the most difficult for women to speak out. I wrote a blog post about this recently, about how these religious circles do tend to kind of cultivate a pretense for sexual predators, mm-hmm. and all of these shame mechanisms for their victims. So, that's really relevant also for a lot of the criticisms that we seem to get. Mm-hmm. A lot of the criticisms we seem to get operate on the assumption that, you know, if women would just keep their legs shut, they wouldn't get pregnant. Even the masturbation argument that the odd person was bringing up today seems to put the focus much more on the search for sexual pleasure, which in most conversations in contemporary society is very male-based. Mm-hmm. It's very based on the idea of male need. I think that because in previous centuries they had the opposite prejudice, mm-hmm. the prejudice that men being more rational had less strong sex drives, whereas women being emotional, weak creatures, we're driven by strong sex drives. And I think biology and neuroscience would tell us that it has a lot to do with the individual. And mm-hmm. there's all kinds of other intersecting things going on there. But in the contemporary emphasis on the male kind of privilege to fulfill his sexual desires, and you see that with these sexual predators in the entertainment world who feel that they're entitled to this. You know, if they've helped a woman out, then that's what she's going to do in return. And you see it in religious communities as well, and it seems to happen so frequently with leaders, the religious mm-hmm. authorities, who use their spiritual authority in an aggressive and manipulative and immoral manner. So yeah, that's what we are talking about. Some of you may have been following this story. It kind of blew up in the Catholic blog world and in Catholic media that mm-hmm. The online community Sick Pilgrim, with which I'm involved, and they're really wonderful. There was a scandal, I guess you could say, in which it was found that one of the male group leaders and founders had been kind of systematically preying on women in the group, you know, cultivating friendship, cultivating, you know, these kind of writer type friendships, spiritual friendships, and then using that to manipulate them. And we were supposed to have Sick Pilgrim co-founder Jessica Messman Griffith on this evening, but she's got an incredibly intense workload, so I'm going to try and channel as best I can her brilliance, which is hard because she's an amazing writer. Oh, she has this compelling mode of speaking as well. But anyway, so Jessica can't be with us, but she would have been able to talk a little bit more about this situation, what went down when we discovered that not only a group member, but a group leader was using his authority to manipulate women for emotional relationships and also for sexual relationships, and how disturbing that was. Did you follow much of that then as it was coming out, Matt?
I did. I followed it, and I was really taken aback by it, and in more ways than usual. And it's weird to me because it's one of those situations where, like, I think the first person I saw post anything about it was Simca, and she posted that was the first thing I saw about it come out on my like Facebook newsfeed. I don't know right. if that was the first piece of information to hit the internet about it, but that was the first one I saw it and I read it, and I remember reading it again, and then I remember reading the headline again, and I'm thinking, am I reading this correctly? Is this a satire article? Like, when I clicked on it, I literally thought it was a satire article.
Right.
Because I was like, what on earth? Like, no way. And so I click on it, and this is a guy I've never met in real life, well, in person, face to face, but we've been on connected through Facebook, and I was not a member right. of the Sick Pilgrim community, but I had followed them, and I had not, and him and Jessica were both people that I connected with on Facebook and had spoken with and talked to and bounced ideas off of, and so it just kind of struck me, and I open up the article, and it turns out that yeah, here's this guy that's been and what happened is that it wasn't it was very much that manipulative aspect that we're talking about. I think that
right.
one of the things when it comes to this, and this is something that I think men have to be very cognizant of, is that you can still, even if a woman consents with you, even if she consents to have sex with you, it is still wrong. I don't know why I'm excited to say this, but it's still wrong to manipulate that person under false mm-hmm. pretenses to sleep with you. It's you shouldn't do it. And that is something that you, I think, kind of going back, Rebecca, what you were talking about earlier about these, you find this in religious communities, is that I think that's something that goes untalked about, not talked about as much.
Right.
That we put a lot of the focus on sexual assault and sexual harassment, like this idea of, we have this very keen idea of what these two things are, sexual assault, sexual harassment, forcing yourself on someone, mm-hmm. physically harming another person through like a strike or holding them down. And we have these Hollywood images of rape, and we don't think about the fact that there are other issues here, other manipulative issues here that involving sex that don't necessarily translate directly into what we have always perceived as sexual assault mm-hmm. or sexual harassment. And
right.
the issue with that in religious communities is that it's so easy for people to, and the reason, and honest to God, the reason I think it's so prevalent is because it is prevalent in religious communities, is because you have, I think a lot of times it happens with someone who is either a legitimate predator or someone who is extremely weak. I'm not talking about the person in general. I'm talking about all mm-hmm. men in religious authority positions who have either, you know, sexually assaulted a woman, a child, or just fall into sexual temptation in general. I think that a lot of times you have people who come into these positions. The people who are doing these things are either actual predators or they're just extremely like. Sexual temptation is their weak spot, and perhaps mm-hmm. they think that being in
right.
a religious
right.
leadership position will help them overcome that. But it is a breeding ground for actual predators, because you as a leader in any kind of religious community, even a blogging community, you take on this role of the charismatic leader. You are the guy mm-hmm. that everyone goes mm-hmm. to. You are the guy that people look to for
right.
knowledge and inspiration and answers. And it doesn't matter how minor it may be, when you are the leader or when you lead some level of a religious community, you have to be very cognizant of what kind of influence you hold over people. That is a responsibility that comes with those leadership positions.
Right.
And
right.
people, especially in religious communities, I would argue, are already in a emotionally and potentially mentally and spiritually vulnerable place, because when it comes to religion, when it comes to anything from the mass to worship to anything, you're already sort of going into it with this sense of self-sacrifice, of self-giving, mm-hmm. of letting your guard down and allowing, mm-hmm. you know, there's that whole idea of allowing the Holy Spirit to come into you, not leaving your guard up. So you're already in sort of this weirdly emotionally, spiritually vulnerable place to begin with. And so it becomes very easy for people in these leadership positions of spiritual leadership positions to take advantage of, and your ability to get people to follow your charisma, your influence, that is something you have to wield with a great deal of responsibility, because you can very easily mm-hmm. turn it into something bad and dark and manipulative, and use that influence to harm other people in multiple different ways. And so we have to be cognizant of it, and we have to be aware of what that responsibility is, and we also have to call it out when we see it. A lot of times there's signs. A lot of times there's rumors that kind of pop up ahead of time. Again, it was kind of weird to me that this happened, because the last episode we talked about almost this exact same thing. And I brought up mm-hmm. The guy from Citizen Radio, Jamie Kilstein, who is this huge, major, left-wing, pro-feminist, hardcore, pro-woman advocate. And it ended up that he was a sexual predator. And it's like, even people that you wouldn't expect, you need to be cognizant of. You need to be aware of
that. Oh, yeah. Well, and this brought up something that's been kind of a concern of mine for a while, because especially if we're accustomed to being in these circles that are drenched in sexism, where it's recognized that men are superior, and you've got this whole like divided gender role thing, and you work outside of the home. You know, at my former place of employment, there was this kind of like sneering at women who worked because they were, you know, part-time moms, that kind of thing. Oh, not that they were trying to make sure that the dads were paid enough money for the women to stay home, but that's mm-hmm. another thing. So you come out of this. And
well,
you see a guy who sounds like a feminist. Oh, yeah, let's talk about that one day. So it's like, here's a guy, and he's like, women should have rights, and men should respect women. And he's like this shining beacon on a hill. And we're like, a feminist man, amazing. He's so woke, he's so thoughtful. And this is actually a really easy way for men to manipulate women. And I'm not even sure that they always do it on purpose. But you start picking up on certain things, like when a man says, oh, I like a strong woman. You know, 20 years ago, I would have been like, oh, that's great. But now I'm like, you sound a little bit like you were ordering that off a menu. Mm-hmm. And also, like, we're supposed to congratulate you.
Right.
So I've come to be wary about certain phrases, but it's unfortunate that, you know, we're so just kind of prepared. We're drenched in sexism, and so the slightest flicker of a guy who seems to support female equality, our guard comes down. And yeah, I do want to talk about how women are conditioned to being manipulated in the whole of Western history, and I mm-hmm. would venture to say most of world history. There are these expectations written into literature, for instance, that the woman, the suffering woman, is the one who redeems the man, that kind of thing. You know, he's the bad boy, but the good woman will come into his life, and by means of her beneficent influence, she'll change him. She's there to change him, and he needs her to mm-hmm. change him. It's the Brontes kind of touched on this. Anne Bronte kind of subverted that whole story, I think, kind of criticizing some of the stuff her sisters had written. Her sisters liked the bad boys, and she was like, no, yeah, not the bad boys. So you have this sense that you're, as a woman, we are supposed to suffer. We're called to suffer. We ate the apple, damn it. So now we have to make up for it. And one of the ways we can make up for it is by being up on a pedestal, this kind of Virgin Mary type figure who's supposed to inspire the men. And we're also then prepared by so many courtship rituals to accept essentially abuse as though it's a compliment. Like, you know, oh, he wants to be with me. He's serenading me under my window. In reality, that's creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy as
but
hell, man.
The whole romantic tradition is like, oh, look, here's Romeo climbing up the to the balcony to kiss Juliet. And yeah, it's creepy. It's lucky for her, she wanted him there, but I would have to say 75% of the time, the guy climbing up on your balcony isn't someone you want to have on your balcony.
No, not at all.
But then you feel complimented.
That's an intrigue.
So, yeah, exactly. That's why we keep baseball bats, fire bats, and do martial arts.
There you go.
So, yeah, we've got the fake feminist man. We've got this the culture that's prepared us to be manipulated, conditioned to be manipulated. And then there's kind of the big elephant in the room, that at least for Catholics, and that is that it's the men who have all the power in religion.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, like, people will say, oh, well, the priesthood isn't about power, it's about service. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to call bullshit on that with the way I see clericalism at work. Oh, if it's truly about service, then why is it that every time a woman expresses a belief that she has been called to serve, that she's told that she wants power? If it's not about power, then why do people immediately jump to saying, oh, well, you know, this woman is interested in some form of female ordination, even if it's just to the diaconate, and oh, well, she wants power. And I do think that until women have a leadership role mm-hmm. in the church, and I don't just mean like organizing the Christmas parties, and I don't just mean teaching CCD, I mean women on the magisterium. I'm going to go hardcore here. And I, by the way, I can argue for that and remain completely orthodox. That's
well, sure.
the fun of it. I think that we are going to continue to see these problems, because whenever power is concentrated in one group, that power tends to corrupt. And I'm not saying this because I have anything against men. I like men, and I do know some great priests. But that kind of a power concentration breeds this kind of a corruption and this kind of an abuse, the kind that we saw happening in the sick pilgrim community. But it was nothing new. I've seen it my entire life. Men who would, you know, go up on the hill and get a word from the Lord back when I was in the Protestant world, or guys at Franciscan who would tell women that the Holy Spirit had told them that they were supposed to get married, and, you know, in rejecting me, you're rejecting God.
How are you going to argue against the Holy Spirit?
And, you know, right, right. And so if you're the one with a direct line to God,
right,
then, you know, the women are like, okay, well, God doesn't tell me anything. I'm just here to have babies. But, you know, what I do want to say about the sick pilgrim thing is that nothing about that was new in any way. I've seen it over and over and over again. Men in that kind of a position of authority abusing it for sexual manipulation. What stood out was that it was actually dealt with. And so some people were out there saying, oh, well, you know, this happened in the sick pilgrim community. They're all writers, so of course they're warped and unbalanced, or, you know, these are vulnerable people. It's a group for the vulnerable, so of course that's going to happen. Like, no, it happens everywhere. The difference is that in this case, the community did something about it, and that was
exactly
it caused incredible pain. It caused a lot of suffering, and that's, of course, why communities don't do it. Yeah,
it caused a lot of pain and suffering, but it was I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was so happy to see this very rootsy community backlash come out. This strong, almost democratic, communitarian, like, just this this shit that I long for when I think about, like, political ideology.
Right.
Just this raw, you know, communal, you know, quasi-socialist group of people coming together as one voice and saying, we don't need the law, and we don't need an authoritative figure to tell us that this is wrong, and we don't need those people to do something about it. We're going to do something about it ourselves. And I mean, I could talk about that all day just from a broad social political perspective in the first place, but I was happy to see that. And I think it is important to stress that this does speak to the power of what a community of people, when they feel obligated to one another, when they feel obligated to, because the thing is, this Catholic online, I'm not even on Pathos anymore. I'm not even technically a Catholic blogger anymore. I'm a Catholic who does a quasi Catholic podcast now.
You escaped.
And honestly, the only reason I stopped Pathos is because I just don't have time for it. I'm sure the Mackerel Snapper will make a return someday. It always does. This is the third time I've quit that blog. So, it made me happy to see that, and I think that, you know, this community of people, most of us. Or at least I have it, but a lot of us have never met face to face. A lot of people did get to meet face to face because y'all kind of all live in the same area up there in the Northeast a little bit, you know. But I'm all the way down here in, you know, BFE, Alabama. So, it's just so nice to see this tight knit community of people, because I'm really inspired by our little, you know, new pro life movement, sick pilgrim, you know, Pathos community of writers and thinkers and stuff that we've developed. And it was so nice to see that come out. But again, the important thing I think to stress here is that we didn't have to wait for an authoritative figure, a police force, a legal team, or something to do something about it. The community did something about it. And I think that speaks volumes about the issues with getting stuff done about sexual assault in the first place. If the community itself would come together and oust people who did shit like this, we wouldn't have these issues. Because I'm telling you guys right now, and this is something that women people, the women are screaming about, that African Americans are screaming about, that anybody who's not a white man is screaming about, is that the system's against them. And the system is against these people. It is set up that way because people like me built it. Okay, we did, and white men don't have anything to complain about because we built the system, we run the system, we benefit the most from the system. Any of our problems that we may have are minuscule. we experience the same human problems that many other people do, but when it comes to justice and things like that, we cannot argue that the system broadly benefits us, white men, over everybody else.
Right.
And so for a lot of people, for justice to come to them, we can't afford to wait around for the police and the politicians and the government to actually decide to do something about it. Because even when the government tries to do something good, the gears turn so slowly. But the community, a community on a communal, communitarian, democratic level can come together and say, we're not going to deal with this crap. We're not going to do this. We're going to oust this person. This person is done. Mm-hmm. We're not accepting this anymore. And they can do something about themselves. And that, I think, is what we need to really stress in so many situations. Yes, we need to have legal justice for these people. But there is a lot that the community can do to move things in that direction if they mm-hmm. kind of come together. And rather than saying, oh, well, why did she come out and say this just now? Or wasn't she doing, you know, how is this somehow her fault? What was she wearing? Was she drunk? Well, she consented, blah, right. blah, 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 all these other things. No. We need to believe these women, support them, and then root out these issues in the past. And look, let me explain something. We rather than trying to defend that behavior, whether it's past behavior, rather than trying to defend this kind of stuff, we've got to just acknowledge that it's wrong and call it out and start changing stuff.
Yeah, I think that's interesting the way you put that, because I do see this fear from men. It's the old when you're in a position of privilege, equality looks like injustice to you. Like mm-hmm. other people being put on an equal footing with you looks as though you're being subjected to an injustice. Mm-hmm. And what I want to say is, you know, right now, these are men who still do have the upper hand, because across the board, they are the ones in positions of authority mm-hmm. in politics, in business, in religion, in sports, in publishing. That's a big issue I'd like to talk about at some point, especially for Catholic women trying to get published, unless you're writing fluff, is really hard.
Or a book about
And MP. So they have the power, right, exactly. They have the power to say, you know, if you don't talk about this in a pleasing way, we're not going to listen, which I mm-hmm. think is interesting, because you can't say that and at the same time claim to be oppressed, because,
right.
you know, an oppressed class can't say, well, we're going to ignore you until you're nice. That's not how exactly. it works. If you're a woman in a pre-feminist marriage, if you're a black slave. But I think they do seem to be aware with these kind of stirrings of uneasiness that the balance of power is shifting. And I don't want to see a matriarchy in which women rule everything and men are enslaved or victims. I'm writing a novel about that right now. the sex robot novel. And how, you know, we may have these moments where we're like, if women were in charge, we wouldn't let this happen. And I'm sure in a lot of respects we'd do a great job, but
sure.
solving one inequality with another inequality is not the answer. So, you know, what do we want then? We want to have a just society. And so when men like you and others who I know are able to call this out and to look at it and also to engage, you know, from your unique male perspective and say, this is how I was brought up. These are the expectations of culture that were placed upon me. Then it helps us women to understand also what it is that we're dealing with, that we're dealing. It's not that, you know, men are the enemy. It's not that white men are the enemy. It's that there's a system
exactly.
in place that cultivates this power, sexual power, political power, the grabbing, grabbing of many things on the part of the men, and cultivates this willingness to be manipulated on the part of the women, and that's not good for anyone. So,
and I want to say, too,
you know, what you're saying there is really important.
And I want to kind of go back to something you said earlier too, and sort of wrap that into a you know, I guess sort of one final point on my end. Is that I, you know, one thing that I spoke about this with a good friend of mine, another white male liberal, who is very much a feminist, one of my best and closest friends, though. He's a great, wonderful individual. His name's Eric Smith. He lives up in New York. He's a great guy. And he and I have talked in the past. And one of the things that he, those kind of eye opening experience to him is that he has always been very much involved with feminism and being in favor of women's rights and things of that nature. And he when we went to college together, he went to these pro feminist meetings, and even there, it kind of dawned on him that when he was going to these meetings, he was talking most of the time. And he was coming from a completely good place. He wasn't doing anything manipulative, wasn't doing harassment, but he was trying. He was very passionate about this. He's very passionate about the issue, and because of that, he ended up taking center stage at this meeting that's supposed to be about women. And that was something that he kind of had to realize, is that even in those situations, we have to realize it's very important for men and white men especially to basically acknowledge the issues in our own community and deal with it there, to call it out, to speak out about it, but to also know when it's time to shut up and sit down and let the people who are actually being systemically oppressed represent themselves and provide the support, and not try to take center. Because if we take center stage, if we completely just go out there and try to completely and totally take the lead here, I don't think a whole lot of stuff is going to change, because at the end of the day, it's still going to be white men in charge. And that's the thing that has to, that we have to, adjust and change here. I'll be a completely and totally honest. One of the reasons there are a handful of really great Democratic candidates running for governor down here in Alabama. I think the governor's race is going to end up being something that people pay attention to a lot as well. We're not talking about it right now because we've got the Senate election going on right now. But next year we're going to be talking a lot about the governor's race. And the Alabama Democratic Party has some incredible Democratic candidates. But I've already chosen the one I'm going to vote for, and that's a former judge named Sue Bell Cobb. And one of the main reasons I'm putting my support behind her is that even though all the other candidates are great and I love them, she's a female. And we need, especially in Alabama, we need more women voices in office. Right now we have a woman governor. I think that even though I don't agree with her politically, I think it's wonderful. But I think one thing we have to do is we have to say, when you have the choice between a woman candidate and another white male liberal candidate, go with a woman. If they're, we need to move in that direction, and because it's not just about having minorities and women and women of color with equal rights and justice, but they have to have a role in the decision making as well. They have to have a role in the social decision making. We have to open that door for them as well. It's not enough just to say, here's equality. It needs to be equality at every level.
Yeah, and what I see in more conservative or right-wing circles is this problem where people are like, oh, well, we've got a woman in power here, or, we have a woman as department head here, or, we just hired a woman to do this, and she's taking a leadership role. How dare you say that? And so I say, well, let's hear what that woman has to say, because women can be misogynistic, too.
Absolutely.
And in my experience, women in those circles are more misogynistic because that's what they've had to do in order to earn that place.
Mm-hmm.
In those circles, if you are not speaking out strongly in favor of the patriarchy as a woman, you just will not be given promotion. You will not be given a space. You get to stay in your job is to stay home and have children role.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't buy what they say, that when they have brought in a woman theologian to talk here, or a theologian's wife to talk there, that this means that they're supporting equality. They're not. They're just bringing in the women who are have made the correct patriarchal sounds and are being rewarded for it. That'd be much worse, actually, much worse, because these women know how to hurt other women, and that's really painful. And it means that this capacity women have to kind of band together in community and support each other, that ends up being blown up. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with you about supporting women in leadership roles, providing they actually genuinely believe in equality for women, in racial equality, economic justice, and all the rest. Yeah.
Well, that's all the time for us tonight. We're going to get out of here before we have any super technical difficulties. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Please share our podcast far and wide with everyone. Like I said, as always, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time.